Yo, what's goody, Spare in the building? Thank you for tuning in to another episode of Queen Talk, everyone. Today, we have a very special guest. Honored to have him here on this platform, guys. He's a well-known community leader in Wichita, Kansas, is a community mobilizer and a champion for youth, diversity, equity, and inclusion. He is an activist, mentor, and chief of staff at Lead for America. Please help me welcome Joseph Shepherd.
Thank you so much for having me. My name is Joseph Shepherd. I'm 30 years old. I'm black, blackity black, black. My pronouns are he, him, his, and I identify as a bisexual man and an ally to many members of the LGBTQ community.
Yeah, like I said in the bio, introduction, I appreciate you coming on to Queen Talk. You're a busy man, so I feel like I really do have a good community leader, someone who will just bring more awareness to this platform too. So I really am honored and thank you so much for doing this for me. Yeah,
thank you. Thank you for doing this. Yeah. This is huge.
What did you think when I asked you to be a part of this podcast?
Yeah, I'll be honest. This is something that in the moment, I'm a yes person. So 9 times out of 10, if it's supporting community, if it's doing something to uplift community in a positive way, I'm always going to say yes. And then when I said yes, I went back home and was like, what did I just say yes to? And I think that's because I've not really shared a lot about this part of my life. I've shared it in a few different settings privately. And so this will be one of the few times that I've honestly have talked about my coming out story and the intersectionalities of what it's like to be LGBTQ and black. But I think it's so important to create space for these conversations. So I'm happy to be here.
Yeah, right. So let's get into it. I know a lot of people don't know you had a rough, tough upbringing of how you grew up. So what, you're not originally from Wichita, right?
No.
Where are you originally from?
Yeah, and I tend to struggle with this a little bit. And so I now, at the age of 30, I say Wichita, Kansas is home for me. And really, that is because this is where I found who I was as a person, but also this community helped raise me into being the young man that I'm continuing to grow to be. Mm-hmm. But prior to that, I was born in Fort Sill, Oklahoma. My father served in the military in the Army, and so was born in Fort Sill, Oklahoma, spent a little bit of time in Lawton, Oklahoma. Then we moved after my biological mother and my father divorced. We moved to Las Vegas, Nevada, so spent some time in the Sin City, and then after that moved to Northern California, the Bay Area. My stepmom is from Richmond, California, so we...
Richmond?
Okay. Don't play. My mom's going to be watching this and feeling herself. So, so she's from Richmond, California. And so we moved there. We spent some time in the Bay Area in a city called Hercules, California, not too far from Richmond. And then after that, spent some time in Oceanside, California. And then finally landed here in Wichita. And we moved around a lot because I grew up in poverty, but also my father is a minister in the AME church. Okay. And so his, what he has been called to do by our higher power has taken him a little bit of everywhere.
Nice. That's awesome. So what age were you during these transitions? I feel like you were bouncing around a lot. So,
yeah, I would say, goodness, when my biological mom and my dad officially divorced, I want to say I was roughly 9 to 10. And when he remarried, I was 12. And so between those two ages and then from there, 15 years old, when I think we moved from Richmond to Oceanside, and then luckily was there in Oceanside all the way up until I was about 17 years old, and then moved to Wichita when I was 17. Yeah.
So what did you do when you came to Wichita? Where did it take you?
Well, the plan was not to ever come and stay in Wichita. The plan was to come and visit my father and my mom before going off to college. I was going to be a first-generation college student, so there was a lot of pressure that I think a lot of first-gens feel as they're going to college. My parents had invested a lot in me to even get me, one, to fill out the college applications, but then to pay the deposits to for my dorm, for my tuition. And so there was a lot of sacrifice there. And so I figured, well, I'm getting ready to start on this big trajectory of my life. I want to go visit my family, and then came to Wichita to visit, and I never left. Never left Wichita. So
what did you do? What kept you here in Wichita?
Yeah, you'll hear this a lot, and I'm sure you've heard this too, but the people in Wichita are very different. And we call it Kansas nice, and I don't like that because I don't think Kansas nice is always nice.
True that.
But I think I felt a sense of passion and care for the first time in my life that I had not felt anywhere else. I met a woman by the name of Natalie Tony through my church that my dad was pastoring at, and she had said to me, "Hey, come take a tour of Wichita State University." And I was like, I mean, I'll take a tour, but there's no way you're convincing me to go to school here. Took a tour and fell in love with the college. This was before all the Innovation Campus happened. So it was still the brick buildings, bowling alley on the top floor of the RSC. But I fell in love with just the care and compassion that I felt like people had for me. It almost felt like they wanted to see me succeed.
Yeah.
And they knew what I'd been through in my life, and they were invested in seeing me win. And that's not something I think you can feel in every community you go to.
Yeah. I don't know what has, I mean, I guess I went to school too. What kept me here? What age were you when you were like going through school and stuff like that to the WSU? Were you still 17 years old?
Yeah, so I officially started when I was 18. So I'm a Gemini. I'm a May baby. So school starts in August. So I was a fresh 18. And then went through, got my bachelor's degree. I tell people all the time, it took me 5 years to get that bachelor's degree. Some people takes four, some people take five, some people take longer, but I got it. Yeah. So, 18 to maybe 22, working on that bachelor's, 21, 22, and then went on to pursue my master's degree as well. Directly after, I didn't take any time off. So that was a very transformative experience. Those years, the experiences that I got at Wichita State really helped me learn who I am and what I believe in.
And you were involved in a lot in Wichita State. Like, you have your bachelor's in criminal justice and your master's in public administration.
Yep.
So, like, when you were at Wichita State, like,
you
were the student body president, right?
Yeah.
So, what was that like for you? Like, you just came to Wichita. You said, okay, I'm here. I'm about to be a leader. It's from the start, like you started. What took you? What made you want to be a student body president?
You know, Fred VanVleet, when he was at Wichita State University, had this saying, and it's been used frequently. It's bet on yourself. And I don't think this may shock a lot of people. It's not that I'm the most confident person in my abilities or leadership qualities. It's that I think when you have experienced what I have experienced in my life, you're accustomed to loss. And when you're accustomed to loss, you're accustomed to risk. And I think many times a lot of us don't step out on taking a bet on ourselves because we're so afraid of loss and we're averse to risk. And I'm not. And so it wasn't that I thought I was the best person. Yeah. It's that I knew I had something different to offer. And I felt like on that campus, there weren't many people that could connect to my experiences, but I knew I was not the only person with my experiences on that campus.
Yeah.
So I wanted to offer a different perspective, and luckily it paid off. And I hope people look at my journey at Wichita State as student body president and not say I could never be him. I want them to see, yes, you can be Joseph Shepherd, student body president, that is bold and courageous and fails out loud and doesn't always do things perfectly, but at least takes those risks.
Yeah, I like that. Bet on yourself. You have done that. Like, you
thank you.
You embody that statement. I feel like you really do. You said not a lot of people had experiences like you, and that's why you wanted to do the student body president. Let's talk a little bit more about that.
Yeah.
What did you have to endure to get that position? And while you were at that position, what did you have to face and go through as well?
Yeah. So at the time I was running for that position, the campus had not seen or known of another Black student body president to ever serve in that position. Later on, we found out that there was a black man who came before me, and he was actually the first black student body president at Wichita State by the name of Alvin Teague, who then went on to do great things in our public school system, too. I've not had a chance to meet him. I hope one day I can. But, right, like being the first or even the idea of being the first, because folks don't have the historical knowledge of maybe someone who has done or looked the way you look coming before you, really added a lot of pressure.
Yeah.
And then I ran a very unconventional campaign, right? I was talking about the need for more scholarships for poorer students, the need for more diversity, equity, and inclusion. This was before DEI became a buzzword and before DEI became a bad word, right? Mm-hmm. So it was a really fresh word. But I wanted to make sure that people knew that we are better because of our differences and not weaker because of them. Mm-hmm. So, you know, a lot of people have a lot of thoughts when we talk about DEI, and a lot of people have a lot of thoughts about bold, courageous, loud, provocative leadership. And I like to think that I embodied those things. And it shook things up a little bit.
But it was needed. It was needed. Thank you. Especially you're saying it was only this, if you're the second person to do this, unheard of, people are unfamiliar with it. And I think that's why representation matters so much. Mm-hmm. And I wanted to talk to you about like the DEI with like Florida and the situation that they're taking back. Like, what are your thoughts on that?
Yeah. You know, I think I said it a little bit earlier, but we are better because of our differences. That's what makes our country the greatest country on earth, is that we have the ability to bring different people or attract different people here. And we should be leaning into those different perspectives to figure out how we do things better, how we can make more people feel a sense of mattering and belonging. But more importantly than that, right? Like, we should just let people be. Like, the freedom to be who we want to be without causing detrimental harm to anyone else should never be viewed as a crime. Right. Ultimately, for me, right, my salvation is my salvation, and my relationship with my higher power is my relationship. And I'll have to answer for what that looks like, right? But ultimately, my job to me is clear according to my faith. It's to do right by people. Yeah. It's to love mercifully and to act accordingly with justice and with equity and inclusion and equality. And so, unfortunately, I think that we've seen a lot of people, places, and communities go a different direction. And I think ultimately we all hurt when we go that direction. We hurt economically, we hurt socially, we hurt politically when we don't embrace different people with different perspectives coming into our community and contributing their thoughts.
Yeah. And I feel like you just said, like, DEI just became like this buzzword. You graduated in 2018, right? So, like, you were student body president before that. So, just a few years. Let's just say 2016, 2015.
Mm-hmm.
It hasn't even been 10 years before people are getting introduced to DEI and knowing what it is and including it in their spaces, for them to already be going backwards in some areas. Yeah. It is really just devastating.
Yeah.
And like, let's talk about just like Wichita State. Mm-hmm. Like, because you said that it just became around like to DEI just. Mm-hmm. When you became student body president, how do you feel like it has grown in your eyes as diversity and inclusion?
I tell people I'm a proud Shocker through and through, and I am. And some people will have, and how can you be a proud Shocker given everything that you went through? I love my alma mater. I would encourage any student across not just the Wichita community, not just in Kansas, but across the country, to give Wichita State a chance, because the university gave me a chance. A poor black boy who didn't even know at the time, right, who he fully was, gave me the opportunity to lead. And I think looking back now, I'm really impressed at what Wichita State is doing in terms of creating access for more scholarships and more opportunities to ensure everybody feels seen. When we look at like the Adelante scholars that are being created so that more, not just Hispanic, but poor underrepresented populations have access to an education and they receive the money to be able to fulfill that education. Yeah. Or the Rudd Scholarship that is opportunity created by the Leslie Rudd Foundation, right? Creating that access for more students to have that education. But beyond that, right, there were folks on that campus who were doing the work long before I was even thought of. Mm-hmm. So your Alicia Sanchez's, your Danielle Johnson's, your Natalie Tony's, who recruited me to not just Wichita State, Wichita, were doing the work. And I think that is truly because of the fruits of their labor, right? We are able to be who we are, and students are able to be who they are on that campus because of the folks who came before me.
Yeah, that is good. I've seen a lot of representation, like when I went to Wichita State. Mm-hmm. So I can like attest to that. Like it was very inclusive and diverse.
Yeah.
And the DEI also just like hosted different events too. So that was cool to like be able to go to that and just get to see and interact with other people on the campus. So
yeah. And I feel like it was like inclusion in a very unconventional way. I was Black and I was in the Asian Student Conference at Wichita State University. And so I put myself right intentionally in this space with folks who we didn't share the same life experiences. We didn't look the same. We didn't even have the same cultural, I guess, practices. But it was acceptable at Wichita State. Like it was almost kind of like, yeah, like we're almost expected to do that, right? To lean in to a different understanding and a way of the world works. And I think that's what makes Wichita State so unique. So I can't imagine my alma mater without a true focus on DEI, because I think that's our secret sauce.
Yeah. I don't foresee Wichita State going backwards, at least anytime soon. Like, anytime soon. Like, I feel like they are on the right trajectory.
I agree.
Going in the right direction.
I agree.
So let's talk about like your coming out story. Mm-hmm. Were you out during your time at Wichita State? Like, when did you come out?
I was not out. I identify as bisexual, so I do indeed find myself attracted to both men and women. And I dated women throughout college. And so I was very honest with the women that I dated, that was like the people who I chose to pursue and be in a relationship with before we went there and committed to being in a relationship. I was very honest with them and trusted them in that moment that they would keep my story to themselves or between us. But I didn't come out until I was 26 and I was in grad school. And I came out not necessarily because I wanted to, but because I was dating a guy at the time who things did not end well. And I think his power that he felt he had over me was to share my quote unquote secret with the world. And he did just that. And he went on Facebook and shared it with the world. So it was a very unfortunate situation as to why I had to, or I felt like I had to come out at that time. But I'm so grateful that that tragedy and that dark time in my life happened, because what he meant to use as a weapon, I used that as my armor and my shield to be who I want to be unapologetically. And gosh, I think that was probably the biggest mistake he could have made, not because it tore me down, but it built me up. And I continue to navigate the world that way. I've been through a lot of things in my life. I've said things that I shouldn't have said. I've done things that I shouldn't have done. And yet I'm not fearful of what people have to say about me or pulling those things out of the hat, because I can stand in my truth. And I think that's the power a lot of LGBTQ people have, who unfortunately have been outed, of when we make it through that storm, you better buckle up, because you just built a very, very strong human being.
Yeah. I'm like, although like you did take it and you to your advantage, like that is I'm sorry that that was your experience of that.
You.
And it's you're 30. So that was only 4 years ago. And that's just a lot. I feel like a lot of us are part of the community. That isn't talked about much, of just like dating people that aren't out in the open yet. So it's like, but that's not our place to out them.
Right.
Who that is. Like, that's your choice of being with someone
absolutely
who isn't out. So you definitely have to respect that.
Yeah.
And that's for everybody a part of the community. Like, you have to respect that, because that's your choice of dating someone
absolutely
in that situation. So for them to use that as a weapon, I like, that's so messed up.
Yeah. And to go on Facebook, I was like, oh, so you shady with, you will put it out to not just those you know, but the world. So
And you know, the thing also, once it's on social media, it's out there.
Right.
It's a screenshot away.
Absolutely.
So What? How did you take back your story and mm-hmm. you do it yourself? Mm-hmm.
So I decided to take back my story that night. And I specifically remember, being with a really good friend at the time. And I was really freaking out because of my father. I have lived my life as a kid being a preacher's kid, never wanting to do anything that could bring detrimental harm to my dad's pastoral image. And I think a lot of people who grew up as PKs or pastoral kids, they know what I'm talking about. Mm-hmm. That we live our life in the limelight of the church and the faith community. And people have high expectations of who we are and where we will go and what we will be. And anything we do, good or bad, is a reflection of our parents. Mm-hmm. And I took that to heart. And so I lived my entire life holding in so many of my truths, not just my sexual orientation, but my insecurities and things that I've struggled with, the other hard experiences I've had in my life. And so I decided to take back my power by calling my dad that night and saying, like, I have something to tell you and I want you to know before a church member sees it. Or because this person had a lot of mutual friends on his social media. And I remember telling him, hey, you know, I need you to know, like, I'm bisexual and this is who I am. And basically I've been hiding it and not admitting to it. Because my father would ask me throughout my childhood and I would lie, just fearful or trying to protect him, quote unquote. But I will never forget what my dad told me. And his response was a deep breath. And then there was a silence. And then it was, are you happy? Do you feel safe, or something to the effect of, do you feel safe? And ultimately said, well, as long as you're happy and you feel safe and you're comfortable, know that I love you and that there's nothing in this world that will ever take that love away from you that I have for you. And I think that was a game changer for me, because I had grown up, I don't know if fearing my father is the right word. I think I really feared the idea of disappointing my dad. Yeah. And that is a pressure that I've never really talked about out loud, but I just never wanted to disappoint my dad. And I think I always worked so incredibly hard to make my dad proud because he made a lot of sacrifices for us. And he wasn't perfect. My father was not perfect, but I think I knew the sacrifices he made for us. And I wanted those sacrifices to be worth something. So
that's really good to hear. Just from knowing that your dad's a pastor mm-hmm. and the love he has for you, like,
yeah,
just not even had, like, that wasn't my experience of just like,
yeah,
but that's so good. Like, I'm glad that I don't, like, how am I trying to say this? Like, knowing that a pastor mm-hmm. accepted mm-hmm. you helps me, like,
yeah,
in like my knowing, like, not all pastors
right
are one way.
Absolutely.
So like hearing that from him, like it helped you, like just hearing this from you right now, like that helped me in my faith that I'm going through right now. And I had a question on like Queen Talk. Someone had asked, like, did coming out affect your faith? Mm-hmm. Someone asked you that, like, did it?
It did.
Yeah. So
100% it did. I'd been going to church my entire life, and when I'd come out, I stopped going to church for 2 years straight. Mm-hmm. And I think it was because you see some people and how they view God. And I think when we talk about sexual orientation and relationship with Christ, there are some people who paint a picture that you can't have both. Mm-hmm. You can't be LGBTQ and have a relationship with Christ or love God or inherit the kingdom of heaven or God. And I disagree. I completely just disagree. And I know that is going to cause a ruckus here. You know, I really had to search deep in my heart, and it took a very, very long time about what it means when you have each individual has their own soul salvation worked out, and that it is not up to the person next to you to define what that salvation looks like with Christ. And when you get to the gates, for me, I'm answering to God. Yeah. No one's answering for me. No one's answering on behalf of me. And I've got to be comfortable knowing that I've lived a life pleasing to myself and pleasing to the King. And knowing at the end of the day, if I get there and he says, you did this wrong, I can at least say, I did my best.
Yeah.
And that's got to count for something.
Yeah.
Right? That's got to count for something. And ultimately, it was a member who called me and said, basically, the old mothers in the church, like they do, said, baby, come back. We love you. You mean so much to us. You know, St. Paul, I don't want to speak for the members of the church, but what I will tell you is I feel loved. Okay. I will tell you that I brought partners to church before.
Okay.
They've acknowledged those partners. Some of them struggle with it still. And so they say, how's your little friend doing? I'm like, okay, you know, I'll take it. Yeah, baby steps. But I just love my church because they truly, for me, embody what it means to be living with Christ and loving and just saying, my job is to love on you and to pray for you and to guide you. And your business is your business. Yeah. And don't hurt nobody and don't cause harm to other people's lives. But your soul salvation is your soul salvation. And more of us need to reflect on what our relationship with Christ looks like. And how do we live in a way where our actions say, I believe in God, versus our words and ability to quote scripture and pray a strong, mighty prayer.
Yeah.
That is not a reflection of how close-knit you are with God, or even, it doesn't even determine your status as a Christian, right? Yeah. Christianity is Christianity and faith is faith. So
I love that. I love that. You said that very well. And it's so true. And I was looking for a church to go to. Mm-hmm. So
come on over and worship with us.
I've been going online, but haven't felt comfortable to go somewhere in person.
Yeah.
Fearing of those mothers in the church and stuff. Like I've had my run-ins with some mothers in the church. It's like what they've said and stuff like that. Not even be able to wear pants in the church. Mm-hmm. So it's just, so I will have to check it out.
Yeah, come check us out.
I'll take your word for that.
Yeah,
that it's comfortable. So after you told your dad, that was the first person. Where did that lead you to after that? Did you run and make your own Facebook status and letting everybody else know?
I did not immediately. It wasn't until I was in a pretty long term relationship with my ex partner at the time. At the time he was my partner. I think I came out on the 1 year anniversary of us dating and we wore LeBron James jerseys. And I had said something let me be very clear. He's a LeBron James fan, not me, you know, but we do love each other and care about each other. And this is my partner.
Of course you had some, cheesy little guy.
That is me. That is me. We're not together anymore, but gosh, I mean, we still talk to this day. And that's one of the things I really pride myself on is all of my exes, for the most part, not all of them, I have a fairly good relationship with them. I can call them up. I can say, how you're doing? What do you need? We can work together in community, both be it my ex-girlfriends or even some of the guys I've dated. And I think that speaks to their maturity, their walk with their higher power to forgive me for the wrong that I've done, because I'm not perfect. And to ultimately say hey, we tried, we gave it a good run and it didn't work out. And, you know, life is too short to hold grudges. So, he's doing great. And we joke around a lot about those cheesy photos we would post or just even giving each other a hard time about a lot of things we did. So.
And so it's crazy that it's so recent, because I felt like when I met you, it must have been the first time that you told your story then with Glisten, because that
was the first time.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah. It was fairly fresh.
Yeah.
But, I think I will never forget when I accepted an award for a predominantly Black organization in Wichita. And they were all of our honorees get to have an escort and you get to walk in. And, my ex, who I came out with, gosh, this is why I'm so grateful to him, because that boy was fiery. Like, people think I got some fire in me. My ex was like, he was very quiet in person, but like that silent warrior mentality. Like, yeah. When we get behind closed doors, like, we gonna have this conversation. And I remember saying like, oh, well, maybe for my escort, I'll choose my sister because I just don't want to be like that guy that rocks the boat, you know. Black community, I feel sometimes it can be hard to be LGBTQ and be black at the same time. And I remember he saying, like, you are not walking in with your sister. You walking in with me because I'm your partner. And I've been in this thing committed with you. And, like, I was like, what? And, you know, but I reflected. And I was like, you're right. And I remember walking in with him to that banquet. And I will never forget the woman who came up to me afterwards with tears in her eyes and thanked me because her child was in the audience and her child was LGBTQ and her child was crying because seeing the physical representation of how she identified in a room that looked like her, that historically you don't see stuff like that. Yeah. That's when I knew, like, I think that's when I realized I took my power back of like, it's time for someone to rewrite the narrative. And I know that it comes at a cost. There are people, when I ran for school board, there were black faith leaders who would not vote for me because of my LGBTQ identity. Yeah. So I know that choosing to be me and live out loud comes at a cost, even in my own community. Yeah. But I choose to say no to fear, and I refuse to be silent. Yeah. Because there's somebody out there, like right. the young lady who was at that banquet, who needs to see that life gets better and that the story only looks one way on the surface, but on the other side there's a different chapter, and I want them to keep reading to get to that next chapter.
Yes. Representation matters. Absolutely. I love that you literally came out and just, this is me.
This is me.
Going through doors, breaking through doors. Like, that's awesome. And you said it, the LGBTQ, being LGBTQ and black in mm-hmm. those spaces is difficult. And I wanted to ask you, I want to quote you. You just made a post and mm-hmm. part of the quote, it was like, I decided long ago that I don't have to compartmentalize mm-hmm. who I am to appease the comfort of others.
Yeah.
And what do you mean by that? Like, is this what you're...
So, Liz Hamer, who I absolutely love and adore and is so bold and so courageous, she used to quote Audre Lorde a lot whenever I was around her. And there is one time she made a quote that really resonates with me, and it's, none of us live single issue lives. And I think as a society, we are so quick to cancel people or shut the door in their face or not even want to engage with them because they see something in them, one thing that turns them off, and then that's it, right? Mm-hmm. Whether it's their political ideology, be it they're a Republican, they're a Democrat, they have no political leaning, be it their faith, oh, they're a Christian, or they go to church every Sunday, and so they must think this way, or they may be LGBTQ or transgender, and I'm going to shut them off because I'm not compromising my salvation, right? And I just think none of us live single issue lives. Mm-hmm. And so I'm not going to compartmentalize who I am to fit into a societal standard that is a man-made construct. Mm-hmm. I can be black and progressive and also have conservative friends. Mm-hmm. I can be black and gay and still believe that I don't have to go to every single pride event to show my commitment to the gay community. Mm-hmm. I can be black and gay and have conversations with my LGBTQ friends about some of the racism that I experience in LGBTQ communities. We don't live single issue lives, and I refuse to stay silent on certain things or certain people because that's not the narrative that we want out there. And I think all of us in the world are complex, multifaceted people. And I think this world would be a safer place, a more powerful place, and a beautiful place if we leaned into the idea that we have multiple layers and we've got to own all of those layers.
Yeah. Owning all those layers in certain spaces for me, I've been able to do, right? Like, I feel safer in certain spaces, certain mm-hmm. groups for me personally. I'm getting to where I don't mm-hmm. have to fit this one spot in different spaces. Like, I'm getting to where everywhere I go, I'm able to be who I am. For you, do you feel like So like you're involved with the Wichita Urban Professionals, which is the mission to develop a network of Black leaders to improve the urban community of Wichita. Do you feel like LGBTQ voices are heard in that space?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Yeah. I think Urban Professionals, I'm so grateful to Urban Professionals. When I was doing my thing at Wichita State as student body president, it was a very, very rough 2 years for me. I lost a lot of opportunities. I received lots of criticism. I received death threats. A lot of people don't know that either. People would literally call the Office of Diversity and Inclusion and say things that made me fear for my safety. And then there was this organization called Urban Professionals at the time who saw the work that I was doing and gave me the Collegiate Impact Award. And that was, oh my gosh, I think many times when we're going through life and we're doing the work and the work is hard, we don't do what we do for recognition, but to be acknowledged and say, we see you in even the smallest way goes such a long way. It's not about an applause. It's about telling someone, I see the work you're doing and it's making a difference. Keep going. When I received that award from Urban Professionals, I've been so committed to that organization ever since. And then seeing other people in that space who also identify as LGBTQ has been really powerful for me as well. So even as of 6 months ago, sitting on a panel for the Fast Track event, being on a panel with other LGBTQ people, not just Black, but Hispanic or biracial LGBTQ people, I thought was a powerful statement to this professional organization's commitment to inclusion holistically, not just from the race component, but acknowledging the intersectionality of you can be urban, an urban professional and ... And we have to account for that when we're talking about the challenges professionals experience in the workplace.
Yeah. I was wondering that just because it is like another space full of Black people. Do you feel like you have to, being a part of many diverse groups, being a person of color who identifies as bisexual man, do you feel like you have to navigate through groups differently? Because you are a community leader. You went with the school board, like, and you're a part of a fraternity too.
I am.
Like all of that, do you feel like there's different spaces that you have to walk and navigate differently?
Yeah. So Dr. K. Mock Morgan talks about being the only person in the room. And many times I find myself being the only person in the room, be it my race, be it my sexual orientation, be it my religion and my faith leanings. I feel like I often find myself being the only person in the room. And I think because the reality of being the only person in the room is true for a lot of us, we have a moral obligation that when we are the only person in the room, our responsibility is to get in that room and kick open doors for others who look like us or identify like us to come through the door. But we have to be careful to ensure that showing up authentically does not restrict our access to meet the long-term goal of making sure other folks are in the room. And so what I'm saying is not that I hide who I am. I never hide who I am. I meet people where they're at. And I think we've got to give people a loss at a rate in which they can handle. So if I'm going into a community that I know ain't got the time of day to talk about LGBTQ issues, it's not to say I'm never going to have that tough conversation. It's to say that's not going to be the first conversation I lead with. Because I'm going to build that relationship first. I'm going to build it on a strong foundation of trust, to then be able to open up the door to have those tough conversations in a safe space for them and for me. And I think when we talk about DEI, we've got to do a better job as practitioners in the work of creating a space where people can say, I've never thought of that. Or I never realized that the language I was using was offensive or racist or homophobic, or that maybe I didn't consider that the reason why people weren't coming to my church because I don't necessarily espouse the gospel in a way that says that God loves me in spite of. Right. And so I think I navigate the spaces by building relationships first and then being able to have those tough conversations. And then also acknowledging, like, there are some folks who have already made up their mind about me and there's nothing I can say or do to change it. Mm-hmm. That's okay with me too. Mm-hmm. I'm comfortable and confident enough in who I am and who I've been called to be to know, like, it's not worth my time to try to change your heart or your mind about who I am. And that's okay. I've got to be okay with that.
Yeah, definitely. I was just like curious because you are in so many spaces and like, I feel like you're a very political person.
Thanks. So just, I hope that's a good thing.
No, it is a good thing. It is, like, it's not a bad thing. Mm. I feel like I don't like whenever we're around, I feel like personally for me, I haven't hung out with Joseph.
Ooh, you sure you won't come kicking with Joseph?
Like Joseph Shepherd, yeah. is like this community. Like you're all of who you are, right?
Thank
but
you.
I just feel like I haven't personally hung out with like Joseph. And you in these spaces and different, like, I feel like you have to hold yourself to a different standard because there's so many people looking up to you, waiting on your downfall, waiting for you to mess up, do something wrong so they can use it against you.
Yeah.
And like in your, like people you're, have done this already to you before.
Oh, 1000%.
Using something against you.
Yeah.
Because they see where you're trying to go and who you're trying to be.
Mm-hmm.
And so I know how hard that is and how hard it can be to do that and navigate it. But you do it. Flawless.
Thank you. And I'm not perfect. And listen, I mess up. If walls could talk, right? If walls could talk, if there are, again, I will always own. And I think that's the beauty of living out loud is like, yeah, I said that. Yeah. It wasn't right. It was in a moment where I was really frustrated, right? Or you know what? I did that. It not becoming, not a reflect, right? But it's like, I feel so comfortable not owning everything, but owning a lot of my mess ups because I want to give other people the permission to own their mistakes too. And then what I always say is like, I'm willing to sit down and have the conversation with folks. People say, oh, Joseph had a lot to say about you. What I said is what I said. And I'm happy to have that conversation directly with you in a respectful and meaningful way so that you understand where I'm coming from as well. Right. Let's have those tough conversations too. Mm-hmm. So I think, yes, there's a lot of pressure and it keeps me up at night sometimes if I'm being honest. And I have to give myself permission to be human. I am human.
Yeah, yes.
And again, I never want someone to look at me and say, I could never be him. Mm-hmm. Yes, you can. Mm-hmm. I'm human.
Yeah.
The way I love is the way everybody else loves, right? My love story, I have fallen for people where I'm like, ooh, cha. The ghetto. and right, my story is not picture perfect, even at 30.
Yeah.
You may read some chapters of my life and go, I can't believe, ooh, Joseph Shepherd. Come on now. Yeah. So, but I think the beauty of me is like, I'm down to talk about that too. Yeah. I'm down to talk about the chapters of my life where I'm like, yeah. I was thugging it out and making some decisions that probably, if the world knew, would look at me very differently.
Yeah. And you're human. I feel like it's being in Wichita. Do you feel like you lead for America?
Mm-hmm.
The goal of that, I feel like, let me get my notes. So Lead for America is a national service program building the next generation of leaders for our country and communities across all 50 states.
Mm-hmm.
Before that, you were
at Newman.
Lead for Kansas.
Yeah, right? Yeah.
So you did the Lead for Kansas, which is to help bring people and keep them in the community and keep them in Wichita.
Mm-hmm.
So what would you say for people of color who are also part of the community? Why would they stay in Wichita?
Yeah. Not just because we need them, but because that they have something to offer that will, not be able to be accomplished anywhere else in the country. I think Kansas and Wichita is unique because we don't have everything here, right? And I think that presents a unique opportunity for people to build. We always ask folks, what do you want to be? No, what do you want to own? Yeah. What do you want to build?
Yeah.
And it can happen right here in Wichita because the market is not as saturated as it is in other places. And so I think if you are in Wichita, Kansas right now, and you have a vision and a dream to do something big, you are in the right place at the right time because one, we have the appetite for it. And two, there's a market for it. 9 times out of 10, there's a market for it. And then three, the final thing I'm going to say is what I experienced when I moved here to Wichita and what got me to stay here in Wichita. Is there are people, investors, sponsors, mentors who are ready to provide access to help you turn those dreams into a reality. So that's what I would say.
Okay. So you would say like someone who is looking to build something, what kind of type, where would they go to? I know there's a few Wichita urban professionals. Mm-hmm. That's something they can access. Mm-hmm. What, is there anything else like a young person of color that may not know mm-hmm. where to go to, where they can go to like help build and just yeah. build within the community. Personally for me, I'm just now tapping into the community. I feel like I've been here a while and we'll see how long I'm here, but mm-hmm.
I hope like a long time.
just now getting connected with community. I feel like everybody knows everybody. Yeah. Is small. What do you feel like is the right route to take to get connected with the people of color in mm-hmm. the community, not mm-hmm. just white people?
Yeah, yeah. One, I think, right, you got to first think about what are my goals? And that takes self-reflection of what I want out of my journey here in Wichita and what do I want to accomplish? And I think once you have that identified, that's what's going to route you to the best places to get connected with professional groups of color or people of color. Mm-hmm. I think if you want more professional development and you want to be in a room full of like-minded folks who are urban professionals and wanting to advance their careers, well, urban professionals would be a great place. If you're trying to kick it and just want time to relax and chill with folks, right? Bringing It Black is a place where you may want to go and see, you know, what events are they hosting? What events are they providing throughout the community that celebrates Black culture? But also in a fun, lighthearted way where it doesn't feel like too much mental and emotional work. And I would also give a shout out to like all of the cultural professional networking groups that we have in Wichita for people of color that, quite frankly, a lot of people don't know about. So we have a National Association of Asian American Professionals, NAP. We have the Young Latino Professionals of Wichita. We have Create Campaign, where if you want to be an entrepreneur, not only do they have the resources to help invest in your entrepreneurial dreams, but they have the academies and the classes to teach you how to do it right, right? Mm-hmm. So I think that's beautiful. We have Empower, which is not only providing educational access for folks who may want their GED or maybe want to go off to college and get a technical degree, but they also are creating opportunity for entrepreneurs to have resources to the things that they need to be able to accomplish their goals. They just did a huge groundbreaking last week. They're building this new building on the north end, right? That's going to be a commercial kitchen for folks who want to learn how to cook and throw down. So I'm trying to go there all the time. But I think we have entities for people of color who are trying. Mm-hmm. You know, the Asian night market is coming up again. So we've got to support those things and mm-hmm. celebrate those things, but also be willing to test out those spaces because we won't know if it's for us unless we actually give it a go. We have the I Look Proud of Wichita, which is the LGBTQ basically chamber of commerce that is supporting LGBTQ business owners, providing them support. So I just think that there are so many great things that are happening in Wichita that they're trying, mm-hmm. And we've got to support those who are trying.
Yeah. Yeah, you definitely listed off a lot of things, so yeah. We'll definitely make sure to, like, get that word out.
Absolutely.
Because I feel like there is a lot of stuff that people just, like, don't know about. I feel like Wichita has its, like, little groups of, mm-hmm. like, what goes on, mm-hmm. but the word doesn't get spread well enough.
And right.
It's very small, so I'm not mm-hmm. sure why, but... Yeah. it could just like word of mouth needs to happen a little better.
Yeah. We need those influencers. If you're out here and you're an influencer in Wichita, you listening, we need you to promote the good that's happening in our city.
Yes.
There's so much good happening, and I think you hit the nail right on the head. Not enough amplification of that good that is happening, and where to go and how to get connected. And then the other thing I'll say is, like, once we get it out there, how do we create a culture of, you don't have to be a part of, like, this is not an exclusive event, you know, because there are sometimes events can feel like they want to be inclusive, but they really give off the exclusive vibe. Like, well, we want you here, but we really only want certain people here. So just doing a better job of saying, no, this is truly for anybody and everybody. And once they actually come, once the anybody and everybody comes, what are we doing to make them feel like they matter and they belong in that space?
Yeah.
Right? You just, I wouldn't be in Wichita if I came and folks were like, outsider.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Right. And that's my struggle even with how we talk about the focus right now on boomerangs, right? Like, we want to bring folks who have left Wichita back, and we want homegrown and home-raised folks in Wichita. And I'm saying yes, and we need talent that's coming from other cities and states as well, because they got something to show us too.
Right.
So, yeah, we can do yes and. Yes and.
I like that, because a lot of stuff does happen. Like, it's growing. I see it slowly getting there, but it is, like, just with the Commerce Wichita Club, like, I see them trying. Like,
they're trying for sure.
And so I want to just, like, take it back, because I want to talk about more of just, like, how you, your coming out journey, and like, you being a leader, I don't think, like, you've got this easy, right? Like,
right.
I feel like you said your coming out story, your growing up, it was hard for you. What was, like, the earliest memory of you knowing, I am a part of the community, the LGBTQ community?
I remember vividly. I was 7 years old. I was at the Save-A-Lot grocery store in Lawton, Oklahoma. I was in the grocery store and I saw a really attractive man. And it just so happened, as we were leaving the store, the man was leaving the grocery store at the same time. And I remember taking off my seatbelt in the back seat and looking out the back seat of the window as we drove away, because I thought, wow, this man is, like, so cute. And that's when I knew at 7 years old. And then I went on earlier, because I tell people a lot, like, I am still a faith-filled person. I think I had a very unhealthy faith perspective as I got a little younger in my adolescent years. And I remember praying to God every night from the time I was, like, 13 on to, like, 18, 19, like, God, take this away from me. I don't want it. Like, I don't want this. I don't want to be gay. I was like, I would hear the horror stories. I would fear how people would treat me. So in my heart, I think I really struggled, because I wanted to, I didn't want to experience the hardships that I knew would come with being an LGBTQ man. And I would say, a lot of those assumptions that I had about it being hard were true. And I would say that I've also been blessed and privileged to have a strong support system in my life, which has made the road a little easier for me.
Yeah. With you coming out and navigating that, how was that with your family once you told your dad that was a relief, that love was there? What was it like for the other, and was your family close since you were, like, in the military, so you moved around, like?
So I talked about my biological mom and my dad and how they divorced. We ended up moving with my dad, and that's how we ended up bouncing around a little bit all over the place because of his profession. He remarried to my stepmom when I was 12. They're still married. And we had a blended family. And I would say, at first, like, you put six kids under one roof, like, we're going to learn to be close.
Yeah.
And, you know, my parents weren't rolling in money. I mean, remember, I lived in poverty. My dad was part of that experience. But they just were like working class folks. And so, you know, we had to share rooms. And so imagine like the three brothers sharing a room, like we're pretty close at that point, right? We know who we're dating and who we're talking to, or just noticing certain mannerisms that are different, which is what I felt like my two brothers noticed about me. So we were close in that way. I will tell you, I think my siblings always knew and just never said anything. My stepmom, 110% knew, never said anything, and just, I think she just loved me, right? And like, she wasn't the one I had to convince, right? Like, I think it was my dad that we all knew would have the hardest time. So I guess what I'm trying to say is they were supportive in the way that they could be. Mm-hmm. And looking back now, I'm grateful. My older brother, who is night and day for me in terms of personality, in terms of interest, is, you know, we don't talk often. We don't talk every day. But you come for me, it takes one call to my big brother, and he's going to see you for what you are. Because no one is going to hurt or harm his brother. And my sister's the same way. And I'm so grateful to have siblings who love and protect me in that way. And I think that's where the proximity of our relationship starts and ends, is call me when you need me. Know that I'm always thinking of you and you're always in my heart. But we're not going to talk every day. We ain't got time for that.
I think that's a sibling thing. Like, we got mm-hmm. our own lives. Mm-hmm. Like, talking every day, like,
yeah,
we don't got time for that.
Right.
At least I got Snapchat, so now I like snap.
We got I love streak, that. Yeah, so
That's a way to stay connected. To see each other every day, not every day. Talking on the phone, but that's good that you had that support mm-hmm. from them and your siblings.
Absolutely.
So your biological mom, mm-hmm. like, is that a different story or?
Yeah. So I have not seen my biological mom. Gosh, I think it's been, when did I run for school board? In 2019. Since 2019 was the last time I physically saw her in person. Prior to that, I was 12. So from 12 all the way to 26, I had not seen my biological mother, and then got reconnected with her during my school board campaign, which was a very interesting experience. My biological mom was a stay-at-home mom. And when her and my father divorced, obviously, like many stay-at-home moms, struggle to make ends meet and get back on their feet and find who they are and what they want to do in life and how to make a living for yourself. And they were married for 17 years. So that her walk was her walk, right? And because of that, she fell into a state of homelessness. And as a kid, right, I didn't know that. And I think my father and my stepmom knew and were trying to protect me and my other siblings from knowing that. But with homelessness comes a lot of things, including mental illness. And so my biological mother is struggling with that. And so I got connected to her in 2019 during my school board campaign. I took a drive to Lawton, Oklahoma with a good friend from Wichita during my school board campaign, and with the goal and the intent to bring her back. I was going to bring her back to Wichita. She was going to live with me. I was going to help her get back on her feet. And I was faced with the reality of what happens when we have good intentions, and the reality is what it is. She didn't even know who I was. Mm-hmm. She didn't even recognize me. And so because of the mental struggles, I was not able to care for my biological mom in the way that I wanted to. And so, I call back in Oklahoma. I have a contact, of people who I'm so grateful for that are keeping an eye out for her and, you know, continuing to just have the conversation. She knows that she has three kids. She can't tell you what they look like because it was so long between the last time we saw her and when we got older. So her mind, her son is still 10 years old, 11 years old with the baby face, not the full grown facial hair or peach fuzz. And so that's been a very interesting experience to navigate for me. And it's not something a lot of people know about me. They know about my story being homeless. They don't know why I am passionate and fired up about how we talk about the homeless and the resources that we provide them. Yeah. And it's because the woman who brought me into this world is currently experiencing it.
Yeah. That it does make a lot of sense now, because mm-hmm. we here in Wichita with the whole homelessness and like the winter mm-hmm. storm shelter, I seen your passion mm-hmm. For that specifically, and it does all make sense now.
I'm sorry
about that relationship with your mother.
Yeah.
That's thankfully you had a bonus mom.
Oh, I have so many bonus moms. Just not my stepmom, right? Because my junior year of college, my stepmom and dad moved again. So gosh, thank God for Mama Gwen Duggins. Thank God for Mama Angela Wages. So I've been so lucky to have, and these are women who are like, they don't do soft touch check-ins. Like they are there, right? Like, Mom, I'm hungry, or I need a home cooked meal, or literally Mama Wages coming down on Easter to cook a home cooked meal, right? Or Mama Duggins, you know, paying and throwing my graduation party, or calling and checking in on me when I'm having medical scares, or, you know, helping to pay a light bill when I couldn't pay a light bill. These are folks who are my village. I was raised by a village, literally. When my biological mom was not capable, literally capable, my stepmom, Sheila Shepherd, raised me like I was her own. You are not going down that path. You are going to graduate from high school. And not just that, I'm going to do you one better. You're going to get in these college courses while you in high school. She showed me I was smart. She showed me my potential. I did not think I was capable. I didn't think I had the intellectual capacity to even get to college, right? I would be lucky to even graduate high school given what my circumstances were. Sheila Shepherd said, not this one. Yeah. You're going to make it happen. And because of her, I owe a lot of where I'm at, like my academic success, and just the belief that I could do it to my stepmom, who I call mom. We don't do steps in our family. Yeah, so
nice, yeah. Nice. That is good. I mean, it does take a group of people to help build an individual. I think that's great for you that you had that as youth. And I think that's what you're doing for like Lead for America and stuff like.
Absolutely.
I see your passion now, like hearing your story, like I see that transitioning into like what you're doing in your everyday life right now. It's like showing these young individuals, like there's people out here that will help you, that will guide you into who you are, and showing their capabilities of who they are. So,
cause someone did it for me.
Yeah. It's all connecting. it's all coming together. That's awesome. And you're, like I said before, you were doing a great job on like what doing and just like, it's you're taking your story and making it better for these other young youth, and they're gonna see that, and they're gonna be talking about you when they're getting older, and it's awesome to see, and that's just great. And I feel like you're representation for a lot of people.
Thank you.
Being Black and being LGBTQ, a leader in the community. Like I keep saying that you are like a leader in this community.
Thank you.
And someone who like came to Wichita and just came out. Like I didn't know, like, listen, us meeting for the first time, like that was your first time of coming out too. When I seen you tell your story, I thought, and I see this confident person, like he's been out for a while. Like he's been doing this. Like I can get there. I can be like in the community and walking these, navigating these walks of life and still stand strong in who I am. So I'm so shocked to like know like that the first time that you've come out. So
yeah,
you're doing a lot with.
I am doing a lot. I'm tired.
Well, we can't have you. You take a little rest.
I can't go. I can't go away for a long time. Okay, that's fair. Yeah,
you got to. You got to keep doing what you're doing. You're doing a lot of great things.
Thank you.
And it doesn't go unseen. Like I feel like you do need to be told like you're doing a lot, because you are a representation for a lot of people, and the people of like Black people in Wichita, I feel like need to come together way more than what it has been. I feel like there's from the looking in, there's just like a disconnect. And how do you see it? You're a bridge builder.
Absolutely.
So how do you feel like we can build this bridge and connect with LGBTQ and people of color. Like, how do we bridge that gap and better understanding?
Yeah, I think I talked about it a little earlier, right? I always lead when we talk about this particular topic from a space of curiosity. Why do they feel the way they feel? For or against, right? Like, why? What happened in their life that has shaped that thought process? Mm-hmm. That's the first thing. So leaning in with curiosity. And two, knowing that my job is to not change their beliefs.
Mm-hmm. Right.
That's not my job. My job is to provide perspective in hopes that it will at least change the way they treat people and change the way they maybe makes the difference between providing an opportunity to someone or not providing an opportunity to someone. But the third thing is, and this is a really hard thing for a lot of us to do, is create the space for the tough conversations to happen. And I'm not saying tough conversations on you just sharing your perspective. Like, we have got to give folks the space, those who do not agree or align with our ideology, the space to also be heard. Mm-hmm. And to share authentically what they feel and not worry about the politics of, you don't say it, you can't say that to me, that's offensive. Because there are a lot of people who want to have the conversation and they're afraid to have the conversation because they're afraid they're going to say something offensive, not because they intentionally want to, it's they just don't know. Mm-hmm. So how do we account for that? Well, we go into a conversation saying, I don't want you to worry about being politically correct. We'll correct that later. Once the conversation is done, I'm going to take note of all the wild things you said that you can't say outside of this room. And we're going to have that conversation. But I want you to talk just openly about why you feel the way you feel. Mm-hmm. And then I'm going to speak openly about why I feel the way I feel. And hopefully by doing that, if nothing else, we can depart that conversation, shaking hands and recognizing I don't agree with you. You don't agree with me. My truth is my truth. Your truth is your truth. There are very few absolute truths. Very few. And so how do we continue to work together in spite of maybe not agreeing and maybe not understanding each other's truths?
Do you feel like you surround yourself with, I know you not always like-minded people, but do you have a group of people that are like-minded like you that you go to daily, like that are your friends here in Wichita?
Yeah, and I keep that circle very small. Yeah. I'm gonna be honest. I keep that circle very, very small. A lot of people, Danielle Johnson being one. Mm-hmm. When I think about the people who could probably tell you everything about who Joseph Shepherd is, what he's done, the good, the bad, the ugly, very few people. Mm-hmm. Everything else folks can tell you, they ain't hear it from me. They heard it through the grapevine. But yeah, Danielle Johnson is somebody who I consider a confidant, who I trust with a lot of my mistakes and a lot of my struggles, and be like, girl,
yeah,
I was in this meeting and can you believe I about fell out? Like, you know, we have those conversations, and I think it's important that you have one to two people in your life who you can trust to have those conversations with, because you need to have that space to be able to lament without fear of judgment or backlash or your business getting out in the streets.
Yeah. And like we already said, like, Wichita is small, so
absolutely,
it only takes one person to say something.
Right.
Do you have LGBTQ spaces? What LGBTQ spaces are you in around Wichita that...
I am growing in that walk. I'm going to be completely honest with you. I'm growing in that walk. I actually just reached out to someone recently, Chris Pompelli, who is the chair and president of the Proud of Wichita LGBTQ Chamber, because I want to have the conversation of, like, when I go into LGBTQ spaces, I don't feel my lived experiences as a Black man is always represented. And... I don't think that's the responsibility of one person or one person is to blame for that. I think it's a system thing, right? When we look back on the history of even just like the LGBTQ history in America, and like from the moment of you know, the treatment for LGBTQ folks who were experiencing health struggles, the treatment was not afforded to Black people. In fact, mm-hmm. it was kept away from us because the idea was it's okay if the Black people die, yeah. but let the white people live, even if they are LGBTQ, right? Like, we have got to unpack that history and understand how some of those disparities and those hardships show up even in the systems today, even within our own minoritized community of the mm-hmm. LGBTQ community. So I've now, over the last 2 years, done some soul searching, and I think I am ready to lean into being involved and engaged, but I also want to feel safe.
Yeah.
I want to feel safe, and I want to feel heard. Mm-hmm. And if that space is not going to be the space for me to do that, then I'm just at the point where it's like, it's not my work then. Mm-hmm. It's not my work, because I think it's time to redefine and challenge the narrative of what LGBTQ looks like. And it's diverse.
Yeah.
It's diverse.
Yeah.
And if we want more diverse people in the conversation, well, everything needs to look diverse, from the folks who we are putting in the pride parades, to the folks who we are putting on the banners, to the folks who we are marketing, the organizations and companies and businesses who are LGBTQ that we're uplifting. Like, we've got to share those stories mm-hmm. to then help other people see a physical manifestation that it gets better. It's not enough to say it gets better and then I'm looking at the person saying it and they don't look like me.
Yeah.
It gets better for you.
Right.
But you don't know what it's like in my culture.
Yeah.
But if I see somebody that looks like me and is saying, I believe in God and I have a faith and I am Black and I'm involved in my community and I'm here to tell you I'm LGBTQ and it gets better, I'm like, okay.
Right, yeah.
So we've got to work on that. So that's why I've struggled, but I'm leaning into it now.
Yeah, I like, same with me. It's like starting this Queen Talk. This representation I felt like was needed. It mattered. So that's why this platform is for people of color to come mm-hmm. and share their stories and experiences. Because mm-hmm. I feel like you said, I felt that way too, going into those LGBTQ spaces and not seeing that representation mm-hmm. of me. Like, mm-hmm. I don't see that. So, well, here in Wichita, like other places I've seen it more so than not, but I feel like here in Wichita specifically, we could do better. But even as like a whole nationwide, like mm-hmm. that could be better too, just like of who we support, when we support it. There's a lot of LGBTQ podcasts of people of color mm-hmm. that you don't even hear about them, but mm-hmm. but we're out here. I just started one, but like
right.
there are many people. Just we got to create our own to absolutely. Get it started. So
absolutely.
I'm here over here trying to make a way,
and you're making a difference. Yeah, yeah, right.
Trying to do something to help that and get us more representation.
Absolutely.
Out there. And just doing this, like, there is a lot of people mm-hmm. of color that are a part of the community. Mm-hmm. And I was talking to someone, Precious, mm-hmm. About creating something mm-hmm. that has people of color, mm-hmm. LGBTQ, like an event or something like that. And you're mm-hmm. a bridge builder. So mm-hmm. maybe.
Yeah. Hit involved. Me up. Yeah.
You're getting more involved now. Like, this can be a thing. Like, this can grow.
Absolutely.
Just cause the representation is it's really needed out here.
Yeah.
And when was the first time you seen representation for yourself personally? Like,
That is a good question. The first time I looked at someone who, like, I felt like fully identified with me and like, I felt like, wow, I want to be like them type, like energy. Like, I can, because they have, I would say there are two people, right? One is not necessarily an attainable person I've like, feel like I can meet or touch or feel or whatever. But Andrew Gillum, who ran for governor of Florida, I remember when his story came out and he ran into a situation, but ultimately it came out that he was bisexual and that his wife knew and was fully supportive of him. But when that story broke, I was like, wow. Like, I remember watching his campaign for governor, and of course he wasn't out about his sexuality then. But I felt like, wow, like, that is so awesome. And then later on in life, I started to think about people within my close, like, proximity, mm-hmm. right? And the person that comes to my mind immediately, just about all the time, to be honest, is his name is Dr. Bobby Berry. And he is a doctor at Wichita State University in the College of Applied Studies. And I just think, I've known Bobby's partner for a very long time. And that's how I kind of met Bobby and knew that he existed was through his partner. And I've never even told Bobby this, but just like the way he carries himself and just like his temperament, how he's able to like really just like, it ain't worth my time. It ain't worth my peace. Like, right. And the fact that he is a black LGBTQ man who is just the intellect, the capacity that he has and leading at Wichita State in academia, game changer for me. Yeah. Dr. Bobby Berry, I think, is that example of like, I can because he, look at him.
Yeah.
I can do it.
And that was like later on.
That was later on in life. Yeah. Where when I met him, I would say 27, 28 is when I started to like really see articles written about him. And of course he wrote his dissertation and I read it and it was on black males and just like the experiences that they have in academia. And that really resonated with me. So yeah, Dr. Bobby Berry for sure.
That's awesome. Now I this brings up something that I wanted to ask you too, just like the black men, you surround yourself like being in a fraternity. Mm-hmm. How now we know that black men, like as not majority of them, how they feel about like LGBTQ and gay, like the stereotype of like how that is perceived. What has your experience been?
During my undergraduate years, my fraternity being inclusive and accepting gave me the courage to then move into my grad chapter where there are some older men there to feel comfortable being who I am. And I will tell you again, this is where I feel blessed and privileged. When we say in my fraternity, love for all mankind, I really believe that we believe that. Now, it doesn't mean that everybody agrees with who I choose to love. Let me be very clear. But it means that we aren't we not debating that. Right? Like we are looking at you as a contributor to this organization who has committed himself to our values and our mission. And we know that you are a good representation of that because you live out our vision, values, and objectives in a way that says that you're a good fit for this organization. And I just, you know, I believe that there are just always things in an organization where you feel like you can feel more included. Like when they bring the alpha wives around, right? Like clearly I don't have an alpha wife. Yeah. That ain't happening. Right. But also, I've never felt intentionality to make me feel less than, and I'm so grateful because I know that that's not everyone's experience in a black fraternity who is LGBTQ, but in mine, I've always felt welcomed.
That's good. So do you feel like have you brought partners like in that circle before, or do you keep that separate?
I don't know if I don't think I have ever brought a partner into that space, partially because I don't date frequently. Mm-hmm. So I'm thinking of like the partner I had when I came out, and I personally just think, so he did come around the undergrads, and the undergrads were around him, and they loved him, and he loved the undergrads. And I think for him, he just didn't have the energy to go to those types of things. I know he went to the HBCU banquet with me that our fraternity put on, but he wasn't like, yeah, let me just roll up and kick it at this social event or do community service with them. I think he kind of was more so the person like, that's your space, that's your calling, that ain't mine. Yeah, and I kind of appreciate that. And I think, you know, the partners that I've had since then weren't necessarily opposed to being around. The opportunity just never presented itself.
But you wouldn't specifically try to like keep them away from that though?
No, not at all. Okay. Yeah, no, I felt like I was very open about my identity to brothers. I don't need to scream it from the mountaintop, and right. That's just like not me. Yeah. But like I also was not gonna go out of my way to hide who I'm with and who I'm loving from anybody either. So I wouldn't mind at all bringing anybody I'm dating around.
Yeah. And I don't think like, I feel like when we do bring our partners or whatnot, I think it tends to be like, don't shove that down my face type. Mm-hmm. But so that's why I wanted to ask that is like,
for sure.
Do you feel like they would be like, we like it, but just don't bring it around. Like we like you, but don't bring that around here.
I don't get the vibe they would. And this is not specific to my fraternity. But if at any moment anyone responded to me like that, I think I would say, okay. And not only will I not be bringing that around, I won't be bringing me around, right? Yeah. Like you don't get to benefit from my time, my talent, my treasures, my acts of service, and not accept me for who I am fully.
Yeah.
I earned my way into this space just like everybody else. Again, not unique to my fraternity. I'm speaking in general. I will not compartmentalize who I am for your comfort.
Yeah.
I don't do it to you. Don't do it to me. If you don't like my personality, if you don't like the clothes I wear, if you don't like who I love, if you don't like how I show up in a space, that's a you problem. Yeah. That's not a me problem. And, right, let's practice what we preach, which is treating others with respect, having the conversations to engage when we don't understand something, and not necessarily frowning, up our face when there's something in front of us we don't understand or don't like.
Yeah. And I think that statement right there is a conversation starter for the Black community.
Oh, yeah.
How we can move forward together. And so that we can feel safe in every space that we go to.
Absolutely.
Because we deal with a lot of stuff already.
Mm-hmm.
So after talking with this, what would be a final thoughts that you want the audience to leave with?
Yeah, I think it would be owning all of your layers. Don't be cookie cutter. Own who you are. The world will try to tell you to color your life inside of the lines. And the moment you color outside of the lines, you may find that you have made that masterpiece much more beautiful than it would have been had you just stayed in the lines. And so somebody could see that masterpiece and say, that's the one I want, because it's different.
Yeah.
It's different, and it's giving me permission to be different too. And so color outside the lines, don't be cookie cutter, and own all your layers.
I love that. I love that, especially like you owning all your layers and being in spaces that someone seeing this may not think that they belong, mm-hmm. but seeing that you're there, mm-hmm. they can be there too.
Mm-hmm.
And bet on yourself.
Bet on yourself.
I love that. And thank you, Joseph, for joining me today.
Thanks for having me.
And doing this podcast. I hope that, like I said, people see this and they see that representation and they know they can do it too.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So thank you.
Thank you for having me. I appreciate it.
Yes, for sure. Well, thank you guys for tuning in to another episode of Queen Talk. Had the honor of having Joseph Shepherd here. Hopefully you guys enjoyed this story. Please make sure you like, subscribe, comment, tag a friend, share the post, and show this representation, get the word around. But family, friends, strangers, love.
Love.
Be nice.